First of all, let me thank the organizers for invitation. And it is a big pleasure to be here and deliver a talk in this famous place. And separate thanks for good weather. And this is a joint talk with Professor Molchanov, who is here also, and share all the responsibilities. So I will talk about wave propagation in networks of thin fibers. But not only about that, because I will also consider the problem near the threshold of the spectrum, which are related to the diffusion processes. So it would be two parts of my talk. And I will start with a description of the statement of the problem and then introduce the real physical problem which inspired us to study that particular questions which we will consider today. So let us think about Helmholtz equation in a thin domain, minus epsilon squared delta u is lambda u, in a domain omega of epsilon, omega sub epsilon, which has a following shape. It consists of finitely many cylinders connected by junctions, very thin cylinders of the diameter epsilon, and junctions have also diameter of order epsilon. We assume that this domain is smooth, and you just can split it in those cylinders and junctions. You have three on the picture. There are three connections somehow, but it can be any number of connections. Any number of cylinder can be connected. With arbitrary boundary condition, it can be Dirichlet, Neumann, or Robin boundary condition at the boundary of the domain. I put epsilon at the Laplacian. And it looks like I can divide by it or just drop it, but we still cannot avoid the singularity of the problem. And it is convenient to keep this coefficient epsilon. Of course, when epsilon is zero, the problem degenerates. But even if I take it off, it's still a singular problem because when epsilon goes to zero, these cylinders, which I will call them channels, these channels will shrink to the graph. And you cannot avoid this singularity. And it is convenient to keep the epsilon before the Laplacian because in this case, the spectrum of the operator will more or less, will be less vulnerable to the change in epsilon. So we will have M semi-infinite channels, and some number here on the picture it is three semi-infinite channels, and some number of finite channels. It is also three here. There is one assumption on the domain, but maybe before that, let me mention that the main problem under investigation is what is asymptotic behavior of the solution of that problem when epsilon goes to zero. I still didn't finish the statement of the problem itself, but the question is what is going on with the solution when epsilon goes to zero, and because the domain is more or less complex, you cannot usually use technical tools, you cannot use computers to evaluate the limit behavior of the solutions. And the idea is to try to reduce the investigation of this three-dimensional problem to a one-dimensional problem on the graph, much simpler problem on the graph. So there is one geometrical assumptions on the domain, and this assumption is the following one. Let us consider complementary domain, which consists of one junction and all adjacent channels which we extend to infinity if they are finite. So for example, for that junction it would be this type of domain, which consists of one junctions and semi-infinite cylinders. Our assumption is that for any such a domain which constructed based on the given network, this domain is self-similar. It means that domain, in fact, can be obtained by from epsilon independent domain by homotety and shift. This assumption is technical. You can drop it, but without it, all the proof will be much, much more technical. So we just use this assumption.
So you think the domain is in R2?
No. Domain is of any dimension. Just I'm good to drawing picture in R2 and not so good in drawing picture in R4.
R4. Oh, okay.
So it is any dimension. So in this domain, we consider one more assumption just for simplicity, because I do not have enough time to go in all technical details. I will assume that all cross sections of all cylinders are the same. I mean, not all cross sections, but cross sections of all cylinders are the same. Somehow I do not used to have two screens, so maybe I can still use them if you need to look at them. So I will assume that all these cylinders have the same cross sections. This is just for simplicity, otherwise, again, all formulas became a little more complicated. If we assume that an omega sub epsilon is a cross section, it is d minus one dimensional domain, then in fact, due to self-similarity condition, it's just epsilon times omega, where omega is epsilon independent domain. And consider the problem in cross section with the same boundary condition. Let lambda sub j will be eigenvalues and corresponding orthonormal system of eigenfunctions. In domain of omega sub epsilon, the problem epsilon squared delta u equal to lambda j u have the same eigenvalues. So that is the reason why I put epsilon before the operator in the first equation. And corresponding eigenfunctions would be phi sub j of y over epsilon. We will use local coordinates in these cylinders, where t is coordinate along of the axis and y in cross sections. Y is d minus one dimensional. This picture is not very good because this origin usually starts from a junction. Let us think about spectrum of that problem in the network, in the original network. And for simplicity, we will start with a very simple example. Namely, let us consider the case when omega is just half of the cylinder or a bounded cylinder. If it is half of the cylinder, you can separate the variables, and eigenfunctions of continuous spectrum will have the shape. This eigenfunction in the cross section times sine with respect to t, if you have zero boundary condition on that end of the cylinder. So you can see that spectrum is absolutely continuous and change multiplicity at points lambda naught, lambda one, lambda two, at first one, then multiplicity one, then multiplicity two, and so on. So the spectrum changes multiplicity. And if you have a bounded domain, the spectrum is discrete and it can be easily evaluated. You will have a sequence of the eigenvalues which converges to lambda naught when epsilon goes to zero, sequence of eigenvalues which converges to lambda one, lambda two, and so on. You consider the more complicated structure, not just half cylinder, but the network, it is clear what will happen. Each channel, each infinite channel will produce the absolutely continuous spectrum. So you will have absolutely continuous spectrum which starts from lambda naught, and it will have multiplicity m, number of channels, infinite channels. Then at lambda one, you will have absolutely continuous spectrum of multiplicity 2m, then 3m, and so on. So the problem which we are going to consider, we will assume that lambda belongs to absolutely continuous spectrum. In fact, there are two separate problems here, one, or maybe three separate problems, but I will not touch one of them. One problem is what going on with the solutions when lambda belongs to absolutely continuous spectrum. What is going on when lambda is near the threshold, near lambda naught, and what can we tell about discrete spectrum, which is to the left from lambda naught? And so this, yeah.
So you think about the, you know, the spectrum of the space of LEBT, or what space you are considering?
Usually, if it is not, if no restriction means in L2. We consider problem in L2 as usual problem for PDE, and we talk about operator in L2. In L2 you have bounded solutions which shows you that you have absolutely continuous spectrum. Yeah, please.
In the transverse direction, do we have Neumann boundary conditions? Or
no, in the transverse direction, this is arbitrary boundary condition. Neumann, Dirichlet, Robin, whatever you please to put there.
Wouldn't this imply maybe that the wavelength of the wave function would be of order epsilon in both along the wire and
You have a function y over epsilon in cross section and sine t over epsilon along of the axis.
Then you have to scale the operator B as well, right?
Yes, in fact, yeah, I just hope not that no one will ask me about it, because I just try to avoid technical details. Of course, here it is not important, but here if you have Robin or Neumann boundary condition, epsilon has to be near the derivative also. Yes.
And can you explain why you get more and more values of lambda when you are increasing?
So one more time, this problem delta u is equal to lambda u has a discrete spectrum. This is a problem in the bounded domain. And if you look at that, can you see when lambda is greater than lambda j, you will have oscillating solution. If lambda is less than lambda j, you will have exponentially increasing solution. So when lambda is less than lambda j, you may have phi naught, lambda minus lambda naught, phi 1, lambda minus lambda 1, until after you come through lambda j, you will have exponentially increasing solutions. Okay. So,
about discrete spectrum.
Yes, and we may have discrete spectrum. This is, by the way, very important point. The discrete spectrum can be everywhere. It can be below absolutely continuous spectrum. It can be embedded into a continuous spectrum. This is somehow unusual for people who just deal with Schrödinger equation in the whole space with fast or low, or not very fast decaying potential, but for problem in the such type of networks, you may have discrete spectrum into a continuous spectrum. Well, roughly speaking, something related to that branch of the absolutely continuous spectrum may have a discrete spectrum somewhere here, which corresponds to the absolutely continuous spectrum of the previous exponent. I don't want to go to details about that. Okay. So now, we will start with the most important for us problem when lambda greater than lambda naught. So we are considering the problem in the absolutely continuous spectrum of our operator. And for simplicity again, to avoid all technical details, I will assume that lambda belongs to the first interval where spectrum has the lowest multiplicity. Lambda belongs to lambda naught, lambda 1. Consider scattering solutions. Scattering solutions described as following. You have incident wave in some channel, C sub j, and reflected wave in the same channel. And you have to multiply by the corresponding eigenfunction in the cross section. And reflecting wave or transmitted wave in all other channels. And remainder decay exponentially in time, in t. It is not time, in t, along the cylinder. So this is definition of the scattering solution. Statement is this coefficients t, j, k form a matrix which is called scattering matrix, and it is unitary and symmetric. The first statement is the scattering solution exists and unique for each j. You have as many scattering solutions as many infinite channels because you can put wave through each channel. So but for each fixed channel, you have unique scattering solution. For all lambda except some discrete set of values of lambda. And the bad thing with that problem is that this discrete set increases in number when epsilon goes to zero and also run as crazy all over this interval lambda naught, lambda 1. So you cannot just throw away a discrete set and stay on other values of lambda because this set changes with epsilon. So our first main question is what is the asymptotic behavior of those scattering solutions when epsilon goes to zero? This is the first question under investigation. Before to proceed, I would like to introduce the real physical problem which inspired us to study that question. And this problem is related to the very heavily discussed in physical literature problem about slowing down of wave packets. Maybe last couple of decades, maybe last 15 years, these topics maybe beat the photonic crystal by amount of paper published in physical literature. So they try to create a device which will allow people to combine a very fast working optical lines together with electronics. And because the signal through optical lines goes much faster, they need to slow down this flow of information which goes through optical lines. And all the ideas how to do this are based on the use of periodic media. And if you consider a Schrödinger operator with periodic potential, then it's very well known that the spectrum of that operator has band gap structure. There is a block solution of the form periodic solution times this oscillating exponent where k is real on the bands, so this solution is bounded. And if you consider the corresponding function of which you get if you take block function times this exponent in time, now t is real time, then you will get a wave. It is not exactly plane wave, but it is wave which propagates through periodic media, and you can evaluate the phase velocity. Phase velocity would be omega divided by that coefficient. So this product is a solution of the corresponding wave equation, for which you have propagation of the wave with a phase velocity equal to omega L over K. And this phase velocity for the light is very huge. So we need to do something in order to slow down this propagation. Not, of course, you cannot slow down propagation of the light, but what you can do, you can consider wave packet. And wave packet is a combination of that plane waves when you combine them over the interval in the frequency omega or near the fixed point omega subnaught. This is a very simple calculation which shows what will happen if you evaluate that integral when omega is very close to omega subnaught. It is just two lines, but maybe I just will not go through details. And the result is that this integral is just the same plane wave, which is modulated by another wave, which is in fact, which amplitude is Fourier transform of that cutoff function. And you have this modulated wave propagates with so-called group velocity, which is defined by derivative of k. So the picture is that you have standard wave which corresponds to propagation of the light, which moves with the phase velocity, which moves very fast, but this modulated wave moves much slower with the group velocity. And the idea behind of all those devices to use this group velocity in order to pass the information and to pass information through optical waveguide. And this group velocity is defined by L over K prime. So if group velocity is small, then we still can do something to create this type of devices which combine, which will allow us to combine optical lines and electronics. In fact, it was a lot of attempts to do that, and all the devices, all the suggestions which we read about in physical literature, they all based on the creation of device using a periodic structure with very narrow bands. Because if band is narrow, then k frequency changes over the band by pi, and the derivative of the frequency would be very huge, and group velocity would be small. So they try to create a device with periodic media and very narrow bands. It happens, we saw many such type of publications, and it happens that no one take care about transmission coefficient, because in the reality, when you create such a device, this device has to have a finite size. And because it has a finite size, but a long one, still everyone hopes that property of periodicity will work for long piece of periodic media, but still you have to put the signal in this media, and it happens that when you put the signal in the media, majority of the signal will be reflected instead of going through. So that is why perhaps the difficulty which people meet when try to create this type of devices, the frequencies for which you have slowed down, this frequency doesn't allow signal go in the device. They are reflected. So together with Professor Molchanov, we came up with idea of a device which will have both properties, which will have a narrow bands, so that you will have small group velocity and slow down of wave packets. At the same time, the transmission will be close to one, and you can put signal in. And this device, we call it necklace type device, is very simple. This is just that picture, but it is any device of the type has to be finite, of course. Small, very small tube, and you have to put wave packet inside of that tube, which split in two times periodically. So when you consider this type of device and you would like to evaluate anything, it can be transmission coefficient, can be group velocity, whatever. You would like to replace that device by a simple structure, by one-dimensional structure. So you have to pass to the limit in that problem when epsilon goes to zero. And it is more or less clear that when you pass to the limit in that problem, you will get an equation along of those lines, the same type of equation, just ordinary differential equation on those lines. The question is, what type of boundary conditions will you have at those points? So this is the main point of investigation. What type of boundary conditions will you have at those points? And maybe I will skip. The picture here shows that for this type of devices, for this type of structures, the Hill discriminant, in fact, has poles. And if you pick up L1, L2, L3 parameters of that device appropriately, then you can have very close poles and playing with those parameters, you may have a device which has both small group velocity and good transmission. So this is the reason to study the problem which I started to explain. And now the final result. So what happens in those points where you have junctions? What boundary condition will you have? And the answer is given by the following theorem, that scattering solution has a following limit when epsilon goes to zero. It has a form of the product of the functions on the graph. Gamma is a parameter on the graph times function in the cross section times plus a term which decays exponentially in time, and so you practically know this scattering solutions up to the coefficients zeta, and this coefficient zeta satisfy the ordinary differential equation on the graph, just second derivative plus lambda minus lambda naught zeta on the graph, and the only last thing which remains is to explain what type of gluing conditions has to be posed on that function in the point in the junctions. Maybe it is also worth to mention that this asymptotic behavior is varied when lambda is outside of some small set, lambda sub epsilon. Unfortunately, this lambda sub epsilon is just not small, but changes with epsilon. And in fact, this set lambda can be covered I have it somewhere on the picture. Description of that set, but maybe it is not so important because maybe I'm in shortage of time. Now let me explain you the gluing condition which have to be imposed on that function on the graph. So if this is a junction, we have to consider a corresponding domain which consists of one junctions and infinite semi-infinite channels, exactly the construction which I used, about which I told that I assume that this is a construction which is the domain which is self-similar. And for that self-similar, we need to solve individual scattering problem to find scattering matrix for that particular vertex of the graph. And the gluing condition has the following form. Let us take the function on the graph, take restrictions of that function on the edges of that graph, construct a vector from those restrictions, and then this vector zeta v satisfies the following condition. Some combination of derivative and function is zero, and coefficients are expressed in terms of the scattering matrix. So we still need to solve a scattering problem, but not for the whole domain, only for a simple one, which consists of one junctions and adjacent cylinders. So the gluing conditions are expressed through the scattering matrix. This lambda sub epsilon exceptional set can be covered by finitely many intervals of arbitrary small number delta and some number of cylinders in the number which is epsilon to the power of one cylinder, intervals of the exponentially small lengths. So the fact that we have to delete a very complicated set of values of lambda shows that this theorem is not absolutely simple. So asymptotic behavior for the scattering solution is valid up to a very small but very complicated set of lambdas. The next point is that after you constructed the scattering solution and know the asymptotic behavior of scattering solution, you can evaluate any solution. You can find asymptotic behavior of the resolvent. You can put here F, and then if you assume that support of the function F is outside of junction, then the resolvent can be expressed through solution of the one-dimensional problem up to term of the order exponentially small in epsilon. And this one-dimensional problem is just, again, of the same structure, function on the graph times function of in the cross-section. And this function on the graph is solution of the ODE on the graph with a function phi naught, which is projection of phi of f on the function in the cross-section. So the interesting stuff is that for the resolvent, the gluing conditions are the same as for scattering solutions. So the scattering solution defines the gluing condition for any solution.
Shouldn't F depend on epsilon somehow?
It is not important. So the important thing that the reminder, it depends on epsilon because it is function in the domain which depends on epsilon. So
do you need any assumptions on that?
No. The only thing is that the remainder, in fact, will depend on F if you would like to have a uniform in F estimate. So you need to know practically only one. You can put here the norm of F. The norm of F on that part of the domain, but the estimate depends on the distance from the point to the support and to the.
So you should keep support uniformly away.
You have to keep support uniformly away from the junction, and estimate is valid if you far enough from the support. What does it mean, far enough? You can be close to the support on the distance of square root of epsilon, for example. So you can be close. Yeah, please.
I'm still a bit confused. If we write the equation as Laplacian of u is equal to 1 over epsilon squared.
Yes.
Then in the limit, I presume that, there are various possibilities for taking the limit, but if in the limit the dependence on the variable along the wire is sort of smooth on the scale of the continuum, it means that unless we have taken boundary conditions which allow the Neumann boundary in effect to take place in the transversal direction, how many different transversal modes are excited?
Yeah, okay, this is a very important.
For the limiting function. Are we scaling it in such a way that...
Yes, I started.
This is closed zone.
Let me answer that. I assume that I consider lambda in the interval lambda 0, lambda 1. That is why only one mode is excited. Yes.
One over epsilon squared, but that's that mode, and on top of that, the correction is only of order 1.
Yes. In fact, all those results are valid for many modes solutions.
It's not Neumann boundary conditions. It's a very delicate engineering, which in effect is the same as Neumann boundary conditions.
Still, there is a huge difference compared with the Neumann boundary conditions. In this problem, when lambda is greater than lambda naught, doesn't matter what type of boundary conditions you consider. Is it at Neumann or it is Dirichlet or whatever? You just shift the spectrum to after the lambda naught. And for Neumann boundary condition, lambda naught is zero, you start from zero. Now I'm starting from some other point. But still, so it is not important, Dirichlet or Neumann. When I start to consider the situation near point lambda naught, then the Neumann boundary condition is very special. But right now, it is not important at all. And I restrict myself just by assumption that I consider only one mode excited.
Okay, that's
because lambda belongs to lambda, not lambda 1. In publications, it is any number of mode excited. You can consider lambda anywhere. But then scattering solution will be not M scattering solutions, but you may put any wave in the channel which are defined by channel itself and by the frequency. Because if you take lambda much bigger, then you have choice in frequency also. And transmitted waves will also be multi-frequency, with many frequencies. So the scattering matrix will be much bigger. Instead of the ordinary differential equation as here, you will have a system of equations. And this system has to take into account that you have waves with different frequencies. So all the picture became much more complicated, but it is only technically much more complicated. The result practically the same. Okay, is it? Yeah. And, okay. Let me then consider the case of, consider the other situation, which is related to the investigation of the problem, near lambda equal to lambda naught. And our problem was inspired by the problem of propagation of waves. Let me just take this picture back because I'm not sure that I finish with this shift, which somehow fell down. Oh, no, I finished with that, yes. But there are another type of problems which are related not to the wave equation, but to the heat equation. And there are plenty of publications related to the investigation of the same problem when lambda is close to lambda naught. Lambda is lambda naught plus some terms of the order epsilon squared. I put some names without stressing of importance of each contribution. It's just in just occasional order. So this problem when lambda is close to lambda naught is studied much better. What does it mean better? I didn't see any publications about the case when lambda is greater than lambda naught. What I explained right now, I think it was original investigation completely. And when lambda is equal to lambda naught or close to lambda naught, also it is very common to assume that Neumann boundary conditions are imposed. And the Neumann boundary condition in this case make a big difference. And there are two big differences related to the Neumann boundary conditions. First of all, if you consider the diffusion equation, then if you have eigenvalue of the corresponding operator, stationary operator, this eigenvalue will have form mu over epsilon squared because of the thickness of the channel. This eigenvalue eigenvalue of negative epsilon squared delta in omega epsilon, it will contribute the term u equal to e to the power eigenvalue times t. I'm confusing, but t now is time. and eigenfunctions in the cross-section. So you can see that this non-trivial solution may exist only in the case when mu is zero or when mu is of order epsilon squared. So in the case of Newman boundary condition, you may hope to get a non-trivial limit when epsilon goes to zero. Any other boundary condition immediately implies that solution of the diffusion equation goes to zero. The second reason why the Newman boundary condition is very specific is that in the case of the Newman boundary condition, you have a ground state, a function u equal to constant, function identically one, which is an eigenfunction in the cross-section for the Newman boundary condition, can be extended everywhere, and you will get a solution of the Laplacian with Newman boundary condition. If you have Dirichlet boundary condition, then in the cross-section, you will have the ground state, which is sine. And you can see immediately that this sine function here, sine function here, and sine function here cannot be glued together in the junction to form a ground state for the whole domain. You cannot glue them smoothly to get solution of the problem in the whole space, in the whole domain. So the presence of the ground state is a specific thing related to the Newman boundary condition. And it made this problem very specific, and this problem is very well known, very well investigated. And by the way, the gluing conditions in this case are Kirchhoff conditions. So the function on the graph is continuous, and the flow is continuous up to some coefficients rho j. And this fact, which was known to us, make our investigations much more complicated, because we try first to prove that the same gluing condition works for lambda greater than lambda naught, which was wrong. So still, those papers in two lines, first two lines, they're related to Newman boundary condition. There are some publications, mostly these two, first two, which are related to the Dirichlet boundary conditions. And for Dirichlet boundary conditions, again, near the lambda equal to lambda naught. For the
may I say something about this?
Yes.
Could you put it back, please? This first line, lambda equals lambda naught plus O epsilon squared, creates a little bit misleading impression that everyone on this list was looking at the values of energy close to zero, which is not true. It's only your rescaling with, you're putting epsilon squared.
Yes, of course.
Did this, and since lambda naught was zero, so it's your rescaling that people were looking at the whole spectrum that was there. Certainly, so.
No, of course.
Make sure that we were not zooming in on zero.
Yes, it depends on what glasses do you have, or under which microscope you're looking for. Of course, this is epsilon squared, zero plus of order epsilon squared, because I have coefficient epsilon squared in the operator. If you just move this, it means that you look for the spectrum near, in the bounded region in the lambda axis. But your domain is very narrow, so it's up to you how to think about it. But in this area, which I put here, lambda naught plus O of epsilon squared, still there is a sequence of eigenvalues. And the people on that list looking for that sequence of eigenvalues which converges to lambda naught. You can look at that at the scale which I introduced, or you can look at this in the original scale with epsilon squared. Still, it is a sequence which converges to lambda naught only. When epsilon goes to zero.
In the original scale, they do not converge.
In the original scale, they do not converge, yes. In the original scale, they do not converge, yes. Yeah, but then in the original scale, the spectrum, in fact, the whole spectrum, if you look at the whole spectrum, it moves toward to infinity, and you look at the part which is bounded in, on the lambda axis. In the same time, the whole spectrum moves to infinity. Okay. So, in the paper by Post, I mentioned with this couple of paper about Dirichlet conditions. He assumes also that geometrical condition on junctions, the junctions has to be narrow, more narrow than channels. And then he proved that the Gluing conditions in this case are Dirichlet conditions. So the, in the limit, you will just have a separate cylinders. This paper by Dell'Antonio and Tenuta, it is extension of that paper by Post. And the difference is that instead of the Dirichlet condition, they consider equation the whole space with a potential which has a very huge walls and very narrow valley, and which plays the same role as Dirichlet boundary condition, and practically the same effect. And there's some other paper which I'm not very familiar, only by emails which I got from that person. But it looks that it's some extension of that result. I cannot tell exactly what is here. So what I would like to tell you about our approach to that problem related to lambda naught. One more time, I do not mention at all, I do not concern the spectrum below lambda naught at all. So because I already only around lambda naught. So my point is that around lambda naught, the same boundary, the same Gluing condition works, and the same approach which we did for lambda greater than lambda naught, you don't need any changes at all to apply the result to the case when lambda is around lambda naught. So the result is valid, and the Gluing condition remains valid, the same Gluing condition which I wrote. And in this case, when lambda is close to lambda naught, the matrix T, that scattering matrix, is analytic with respect to square root. And it is unitary and symmetric. And because of that, eigenvalues of that matrix are plus minus 1. In fact, they are negative 1 for generic domains. All of them will be negative 1. Why? Because I will explain that in a second, that generically all negative 1. And if they are negative 1, let's assume that plus 1 have multiplicity d plus and negative 1 d minus. The statement is that you can rewrite that expression in the form that that you have projection operator and such that applying projection operator to zeta, you will get 0, and orthogonal projection to the derivative, you will get 0 up to term of order epsilon. So if you are close enough to the to lambda equal to lambda naught, that condition takes the form that under appropriate orthogonal transformation in the space of functions, you will get some number of Dirichlet data and some number of Neumann data. So the general Gluing conditions for arbitrary omega sub epsilon is the following: Dirichlet for some number of components, Neumann for other components. This is the first statement. The next statement is that in reality, you practically always have Dirichlet boundary condition. This is true not only as in the suggestions in the paper by Post, when you assume that your junction is narrow, but in general, you will have, in, for generic domain, you will have the Dirichlet boundary condition.
Sorry for interrupting you. In the case of, in the cross section, you start from the Neumann. In the case of the Neumann bound.
Yes.
close to zero, say, probably one should recover Kirchhoff condition.
You recover Kirchhoff.
Yeah, you got me. Just a second. Yes, you're absolutely right. My statement has to be the following one, that for the Dirichlet boundary condition, for all cases except Neumann boundary condition, you will get as a limit separation of the separation, and you will have Dirichlet condition. This is a statement for the case when you have Dirichlet boundary condition originally on the boundary of your domain. If you have Neumann boundary condition on the then you will have Kirchhoff. And by the way, let me mention the following. This is the last slide, so it's for those who are already tired, just the end is close. So first of all, let me mention that Kirchhoff boundary condition corresponds to the case when scattering matrix has all eigenvalues negative 1 up to one eigenvalue, which is plus 1. Because Kirchhoff condition practically means you can normalize this vector, rotate coordinates, and then this condition is equivalent to the fact that after rotation, one condition on derivative is given, and all other are Dirichlet condition for the orthogonal complement to that direction. So Kirchhoff condition means that Neumann condition for one variable, Dirichlet for all other variables in appropriate system of coordinates. And this is the first remark. Second remark is that for generic domain, if you have not Neumann boundary condition, but any other boundary condition, you will always have for generic domain all eigenvalues equal to negative 1. And this fact is related to the following, existence of if eigenvalues of the scattering matrix. I'm sorry. This is not a last, but one before last. Can you see if you have a scattering solution, then if this matrix is not negative one, if this matrix is negative one, then this is zero, TGK is zero, this is negative one, everything disappears. But if it is not negative one, matrix is not negative one, then the scattering solution as a limit defines a bounded solution. So the fact is whether it is negative one or not negative one is related to the fact whether you have a ground state, a bounded solution, or not. For Neumann boundary condition, you have a ground state. And that is why you will have Kirchhoff condition. For other boundary condition, you practically never have ground state generically, and that is why you will have Dirichlet boundary condition as a limit. So this is the last slide, and this is explanation. First, it goes explanation of what I already told, and maybe a couple of words about some other approach to study that problem, which I do not have time to discuss at all. And there is another approach to replace the original problem on the complicated domain by a system of ordinary differential equation on the graph with a potential, and use Marchenko approach to solve inverse scattering problem. One can construct effective potential on the graph, which have the same scattering data as the scattering data defined in the original problem. And the advantage of that approach is that you can construct effective matrix potential, which doesn't depend on lambda, and reduce your problem to a system of ordinary differential equation on the graph with gluing condition of arbitrary type. Not necessarily.
Only lambda naught, lambda 1.
Yes, at that moment it is done only on the first interval of lambda naught, between lambda naught and lambda 1, because here we have a lot of difficulties due to the branching point at lambda 1 and higher for the scattering matrix. Okay, so this is an approach which pure formal, because you just replace your problem by similar one, which has the same scattering data. It is not asymptotic behavior of the solution, but just introducing another problem on the graph, which has the same scattering data, and then you can investigate this one and to make some conclusion about the region. Okay, that's it.